Ms. Coley and Ms. Tu in respect of the independent.
Ms. Coley.
Good afternoon, Chair and panel. We will continue with the evidence of Ms. Coley and Ms. Richards. I just have a couple more things to raise with both of you. Firstly, if I can identify that the report found that the standards were not met in NMS2 in respect of the independent listener. And Ralph, would you mind getting up ISI 000729007? The top of the page, please. This is your ISI report, which was found that the school has appointed an independent listener, but some of the pupils were not aware of who this was. The person appointed is also a governor of the school, and so is not demonstrably independent, as would normally be expected. Miss Coley, would you like me to enlarge that slightly?
No, that's fine.
Okay. So I think this question is best judged by Miss Coley. Can you identify, I think Miss Morland this morning may well have said that she wasn't a governor of the school. Have you managed to find your original handwritten note to identify whether that was an error on your part?
Well, on my handwritten note, I have written that the I was looking in the boarding handbook to see whether it said who the independent talking about the independent listener, yeah.
Yes.
Who the independent listener was. It wasn't mentioned in the boarding handbook, but it was mentioned in the boarding houses on the walls, which is where it should be, in the boarding houses. But I have written down here, the independent listener is the child protection governor, so not independent.
Right. Okay. So can I just ask generally about independent listeners? They obviously, I think it was in 2002 that this became a relevant standard. It came in with the national minimum standards and has been in since. From your over 160 inspections of boarding provision,
40 of boarding,
40
provisions.
Of boarding, from your 40 inspections, is the independent listener, firstly, is it useful? Could you answer that question? Is it something which is useful? Do the children use it?
I can't answer that because I have no figures to answer that. In some schools, it is clear that the children know who the independent listener is and know that they can go to her or him if they wish to. The person is introduced to them, but I have no idea whether, in fact, that person is used. I don't know that we would ask that question because it's something confidential for the children to be able to go to them. So the school shouldn't know, unless there is a safeguarding concern, about how many times children go to the independent listener. So I don't know. But in some schools, the children know who it is. In other schools, I have to say, the children do not know who it is. And in this particular school, I have noted that some of the children had heard who it was, but some of them hadn't got a clue.
I mean, as I understand it, I think the rough rule of thumb in the guidance at the moment is that the listener should come in once a term or so. Do you think that that's enough for the children to be able to build a relationship of trust? Either one of you or neither of you.
I think there's a tension between the two. I think the independence is important in that the idea is that the children feel them to be separate from the institution in which they are. And at the same time, if they are to talk to and disclose sometimes, and in these cases, incredibly sensitive matters, then it is important that they know who this person is and they feel happy disclosing to them. So I think there is a tension in that independence and being somebody who can be confided in and trusted.
I'm just thinking, within the children's home settings, you have something called the Regulation 40 visitor, who has to visit monthly and whose job really is to act as a quasi-independent advocate and to has a much more intensive role. Do you think that's something that pupils in boarding school would benefit from, or do you think that's not necessary?
I'm not sure I can answer, but I think it's certainly something which is worth consideration, and I think I would have to understand a little bit more about how that works. Of course, there is now increased opportunity for external links and contacts with mobile phones, with smartphones, etc. So over the last 20-odd years, that has changed significantly in terms of the way in which pupils can contact other people outside the institution that they're residing in. But I think that's an interesting proposition. I would need to think further on it, I think.
But following on from that, we know that mobile phones are more common, but we're also looking at Cheetham's, as well as a number of the other music schools, have quite a large component of international students. It's one of their unique selling points, really, is children come from all over the world. Now, how much do you think the Independent Listener Service currently looks at or reflects or could be of assistance to those children who might not have parents on tap on hand, but because of time boundaries, time differences? If you're trying to telephone Australia, for example, you're never going to get quite the right time. Do you think that's something that for those schools where there is a significant proportion of international students, there should be a different sort of offer available?
I certainly think that there is an increased vulnerability for these children in residential settings where parents are overseas. So in short, I think the answer is yes, I think it is worth considering how that that service and that provision could be better suited to those to the needs of those children.
Right. And could we now go to identify that Ofsted in 2011 said that the boarding was good. You found a number of standards were not met, if I put it that way, because I know you don't grade in that way. You also identify within your witness statement, which I don't think we need to go through in any great detail, that there are a number of areas, not just staff checks, for example, complaints, the way that the governing body operated, the Independent Listener Service even, all of which could have been identified in 2011. What do you think this tells us about the limits of inspection if you aren't very directed to a particular problem, if anything?
So I mean, I'd perhaps like to point out we don't have the evidence from the Ofsted inspection,
yes.
So I think it is unfair to make a comment about
the
evidence they
found. No, I'm not asking you to sort of criticise, but just identifying, it might be for perfectly appropriate reasons that different judgments were reached at that time.
Yes.
But it's obviously quite a small time period. But what does this tell us about... Because obviously in 2011, one of the major differences is nobody was looking for anything. They were just going in, it was a routine inspection, whereas you were going in with a direct brief to say we're going to look at this, this, this and this. And not just that, but you went in, and this isn't an improper way, but you went in mob handed. I mean, there were seven people for 2 days as opposed to two people for 1 day or 2 days. So it's a very different type of thing.
Yeah.
Do you think that inspection can really find out safeguarding problems?
So the role of an inspector is not to dig out, to investigate individual concerns or complaints. The role of inspections, and therefore inspectorates, is to identify whether schools have got the policies, the processes, and the implementation, of course, and the paperwork in place which enables the school standards to be met. So all process of inspection is about gathering evidence. Where we have, the better the quality of the evidence and the information we have prior to an inspection, the more able we are to be able to triangulate all the information we have and also to shape our inspection trails and our thinking prior to the inspection in order to ensure that we ask the right questions of the right people and probe more deeply. So our role is not to investigate a specific concern and... That, I think, is a challenging sometimes, I think, for people who are not involved in inspection day to day, to understand that that is not our role. That role lies properly with the people such as the police, who are trained, qualified and indeed have the power to investigate, and indeed local authorities as well. So it is the investigation of specific concerns lies there, whilst the inspection against the standards of which those concerns contribute evidence and information, which enables us to shape the inspection most effectively.
And you mention information sharing, And I think we can see in this case a direct example of Miss Coley being able to identify something which hadn't been noted by the school, which otherwise she might not have known. Is information sharing good enough between yourself, the local authority, the police, the Department for Education and Ofsted and the DBS, who are the main bodies who would be given information?
So, as the regulator of schools, the DfE holds information about all of our schools and, for want of a better word, collates concerns. I have no issue. In fact, I'm confident that the DfE shares all concerns with us prior to an inspection, and therefore that the information that comes to us via the DfE, I'm satisfied that we always receive it. Ofsted indeed would share concerns with the DfE. Do we always get information from other agencies? It would seem that we do not, and it came out in previous modules that we've been involved in, that sometimes information, we've become aware of information afterwards that actually was already in the knowledge of other groups and agencies. It is, of course, impossible to know what you don't know again, as I mentioned earlier.
The last point, but by no means the least, we talked earlier about the Guardian. In this particular case, it was the position, and Ralph, can we get up ISI 00072900006, which again is Miss Coley, it's the inspection report which was published at the top, please, Ralph. So this is about educational guardians. We spoke briefly about them, but in the context of Cheetham's, it was found that one current member of staff had been appointed by a parent as a guardian for a pupil, and I believe that pupil had in fact made some allegations. had in fact made some allegations, not against the staff member who was a guardian, but about something else. Uh-huh. While the school did not appoint the individual, such an arrangement could make the lines of responsibility indistinct. Is there anything which specifically says that staff members cannot become guardians?
No, there isn't. Our expectation is that were staff members to be appointed as a guardian, that the school risk assess that. But there is no legislation which precludes it. My personal view is that for exactly the reason we can see in the statement that's pulled up, is that actually it does blur boundaries, has the potential to cause problems or to not enable problems to be surfaced.
And as far as you're concerned, in respect of guardianship as a whole, our understanding from the organisation which represents some of them is that it is an area which is pretty much unregulated, in that there are no formal standards, licence, registration, regulation. People should register with local authorities as private foster carers if they do it for more than 28 days in a row. Is it your experience, because obviously you are likely to inspect the vast majority of schools where guardians are required, because you inspect most independent boarding establishments. What do you think about the current regulation and system of guardianship? And secondly, do you think it needs to be changed or enhanced in any way?
So given that there is no regulation, then yes, I do believe that there should be some formal regulation.
And does this matter increasingly? Because I think I said in my opening, there are now around, I think it's 29,500 roughly, boarders who are international boarders, so need guardians. So I've made that not quite half, but more than a third of the entire boarding population. So is this something which has become more of a problem over the past 15 years? Not a problem, but more of an issue over the past 15 years.
I don't have the stats to say how many, the increase in overseas boarding, but it's certainly, I believe it has increased. Of course, some of those will have close family and friends appointed as guardians, so the total number will not be those who have appointed somebody unknown to the family. But it still remains a significant concern to me, yes.
And are there any other particular concerns you'd like to raise with inquiry at this stage, recognising, of course, Miss Richards, that you will be returning, even if Miss Coley doesn't return, in phase two to answer some more general questions? Are there any particular issue in respect of international students that you would like to alert the inquiry to at this stage, either yourself or Ms. Coley?
I think not at this stage, given the next stages.
Ms. Coley, is there anything you would like to say about the international student? As somebody who actually physically goes and inspects these places, are there any particular issues you've noticed?
No.
Chair and panel, I have no further questions. Please wait there, because the chair and panel may well have some questions for you.
Yes, just to begin, did Cheetham's have internal systems of quality assurance?
From the safeguarding point of view, do you mean?
Yeah, well, or indeed wider than that.
I mean, the internal systems for safeguarding should have been what the governor's proprietor, FOFIS, whatever they're called, whatever they should have been having a quality assurance from that point of view. I have noted on one of my forms that the deputy head seemed overwhelmed by the process of the inspection at that time. And I'm wondering whether perhaps she had too much quality assuring to do of what was happening and found this a tricky system.
I perhaps could press you on that, but right. In terms of quality assurance, I mean, how did the school know whether they were getting better or worse in important aspects of their functioning?
Well, the report itself would have obviously made the issues clear after we had been in. But if they were... there should be systems within every school whereby the senior management team are supporting their staff and overseeing and following out quality assurance. I'm not getting to your point, am I?
No.
Sorry.
Perhaps I'm not making it clear enough. But it seems to me that any institution with welfare functions should not be relying on inspectorates to tell them and provide assurance to them on whether they're performing well or performing badly.
Yes, I would agree. Would you want to say anything?
I think that from the report and from what Ms. Coley found during the inspection, that those internal systems did not appear to be in place.
Right, thank you. Ms. Sharpley.
This is probably a general question for next week, but I said I'd ask it, so I'll do it now. The report in 2011 and the report in 2013 appeared from a public perspective to be different. I understand from what you've said that there are differences which may be to do, for example, with frameworks, etc. I know not. But do you have a solution to the problem, given that you're required to give an assurance to some extent to the public who value inspectorate reports and may affect their choice of schools, for example? So it's very important that it gives correct information for public consumption. Do you have a view, I'm looking specifically at Ms. Richards, as to how this sort of thing can be remedied for the future?
Well, it's always a challenge, because an inspection is always valid on the day and at the time of the inspection, because people change, processes change, and indeed information changes. So there is a point at which an inspection gathers the evidence at the time of the inspection and makes its judgment on that. And we have seen in other modules cases where information then is drawn out. And I think it was the point made earlier by Council that that where information is shared, it is that much easier to focus one's attention and the inspection trails. So is there a solution to that? I'm not sure that there is. I think inspection is about a moment in time, giving an assurance at that moment that the systems, the processes, the policies, and the understanding of the people and the implementation of all of those is doing what it should do, and that therefore should continue to do what it should do.
I see, thank you.
No further questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Richards and Ms. Coley. Thank you for coming to give evidence.